Hello and welcome to Shelf Respect, the book podcast focused on both the craft and chaos of fiction. I'm Knox McCoy. Joining me as always, they are suing the FCC. It's Jamie Golden and Laura Tremaine. Did you hear?
I'm always suing the FCC.
Yeah, yes, that's right.
I saw it come across my breaking news.
Did you realize Jimmy Kimmel was going to be this polarizing of a political figure, like even like a year ago? Because I did not, to be honest with you.
No. Yeah. Why? Listen, we should all be suing the FCC. We're going to start a change.org. We'll put it in the links. And we're going to sue the FCC. Everyone will contribute a dollar. Everybody get
on board.
We'll
do it right after the episode. It's going to be great. In this episode, we are going to be discussing footnoted stories happening in the world of books and authors that we want to make sure you do not miss.
But before we do that, have you left us a nice review? Would you? Could you? That'd be great. Even if you don't listen to Shelf Respect on Spotify or Apple, those are great places to say nice things about us. Even if you're not 100% sure they're true. Okay. 5 stars goes a long way for folks to give our little show a chance. And don't bring up Shakespeare. Ask me how I know. Okay. Thank you. Leave a review. That'd be great. Also, Erin is out today. She's still on leave. So we wanted to ask someone we knew really well, so maybe I've peed in 3 of their homes. We wanted someone who we know is great on a mic because they've been a podcaster for over a decade. We wanted someone who likes us, and this person once drove 7 hours to be the guest at our first ever live show, and we did not even give her gas money because we lost so much on that event, okay? And we did, of course, want to invite someone who reads obsessively and has lots of opinions on the subject of reading. And all roads led to Laura Tremaine. Laura started her internet life as a blogger, became a podcaster, now has written 2 books, Share Your Stuff and The Life Council. She writes a super popular Substack called Secret Stuff, and she lives in L.A. with her husband and 2 kids. Laura Tremaine, welcome to Shelf Respect.
I can't believe I tick all those boxes. I'm so glad to be here.
Yeah, it's really, we kind of put you through the ringer, and we're grateful that you've allowed us to do that.
And you still keep coming around. You still keep answering the call.
I am always up for it. When Jamie texts me, "Can you?" I say yes before I even finish reading the text.
She does. She actually does do that. So it's great.
Today's episode is sponsored by Vinted. There's a very specific kind of optimism represented by a shirt you haven't worn in 2 years, but you still keep. You keep telling yourself it's going to go back into the rotation, but it's not going to go back into the rotation. It's just sitting there, taking up space and quietly judging you. That's where Vinted comes in. Vinted is a secondhand marketplace app that makes it simple for everyday sellers, people like us, to clear out the clothes they no longer wear, give those pieces a second life, and make some extra money while doing it. And listing is genuinely quick. A few photos, the details, your price, and you're done. Once something sells, Vinted creates the prepaid shipping label for you, so you're not standing at a counter somewhere trying to figure anything out. Here's the part I actually care about. Vinted has no seller fees. You keep every dollar you earn, which means that the shirt that's been haunting your closet since 2024 can become 3 hardcover books you'll actually use and read. Ready to see what's hiding in your closet? Download the Vinted app for free and start listing. Remember, no seller fees, so you keep every dollar you earn. Plus, Vinted is offering free shipping in the US for a limited time. Download Vinted and give the clothes you no longer wear a second life. Well, we're super excited that you're here. We have a list of news stories we want to talk about. You've brought your own that we're going to get to in a second. Before we get to yours, Jamie, why don't we lead off with yours? You had briefed me a little bit kind of in pre-recording about what it was about. And then you very helpfully included an absurd file into my Google Drive that included the word TikTok downloader. I was like, I'm signing up for TikTok. Just want to do this because this is insane.
That's right.
But I got acquainted with this entire story. So why don't you intro like what we're talking about and why it's important?
Yes. Listen, you know, I love book talk. The crazy over there is a special version of crazy. I say that book talk crazy is genuinely absurd. Book threads is more thoughtful and literary, but also angry. And then Bookstagram is more like, did you like my flat lay? It's a pretty. Do you like it? So I like book talk for that reason. So one of a very large creator who talks about books is PB Squamer. Okay. And I'm sure it's Squamer, but I'm saying Squamer because that's more fun. PB Squamer, he is a content creator. He has a reading podcast called Smashcast, which is mainly smut, because it's about smashing. Did you get it? It's about smut. Yeah. He ran an OnlyFans for a long time and made a lot of money doing it. Then he moved it to a Patreon, because you can also have your OnlyFans on Patreon. He has a Cameo, $30. You can pay him. He'll do you a nice, solid, whatever that means. And but on Instagram, he has 332,000 followers. And on TikTok, he has 568,000. It does put him in... there are only a few book talkers that have over 500,000 followers. And a lot of them are men, which we'll get to. But here's how P.B. Schwamer became really popular. He read ACOTAR. That's all it takes. Knox, if you would just read A Court of Thorn and Roses and then talk about it, maybe with your shirt unbuttoned a little, you can make bank. I'm just telling you.
Ashley wants me. She's like, you will read ACOTAR for me, not for content before you read it. So don't make that mistake.
No, and you should read it for Ashley. Yeah. You should read it for Ashley. But he then made some sexy content. I know both of you, even though you do dabble mostly in literary fiction, I'm sure you're familiar with Nevessa Allen's book series that is dark romance. That starts with the book Lights Out, where a TikToker is in a mask and then stalks people. And then she's into it. And so So P.B. Schwamer would pretend to be that character. He would be in a mask and then show his pecs. And women were into it. Not all women, but maybe me a little. So, but then he posts this TikTok. And it gets deleted almost immediately. But thank God for the screen recorders, because we got to experience it. And so in this, he's, and we'll link to a clip of it, maybe the weird file that I put in Google Drive. We'll link to it so you can watch it. But he said, okay, every smaller author keeps asking me to read their books. So here's the deal. You pay me a $200 deposit to read, audio only. I can't handle reading with my eyes. And he was like, and then I'll charge you a $800 to make a video about your book. He even says, I avoided this for so long because I didn't want to annoy people. Spoiler, he still did. And then he said, but I need the money. I want to move out of this house. And so there are, and there are currently no books that I'm dying to read. So hit me up in email. He's now since posted an apology video, which someone said he owed them $200 for watching the apology video. he mentioned that other creators get paid sponsorships from publishers and he doesn't. And so he does admit that he handled it badly. And this created lots of discussion on the internet, because it was a weird thing. Like, a lot of influencers wrote hard for him and said, yeah, why is books the only content creation where we're expected to advertise, author feature, market, plug, with the expectation of no monetary payment? That's Nikki's Novel Reviews wrote that. And then a publisher said, we don't expect that. Like, we don't expect that. And I was like, Do you not? So my take on this is, I want your initial reactions is, did he do a bad thing? Did he do a bad thing? Or, because the internet was split, a lot of people were like, you should read for the joy of it. Just, you shouldn't have to get paid.
Love of the game. Yeah.
Love of the game. But then is there a case to be made that, like, well, content creators who are reading a book, talking about the themes, what they loved, what they didn't love. He also said his DMs were full all the time of small authors wanting to send him their books. And he had a lot of guilt around that. Laura, thoughts on this world? Like, did P.B. Schwamer shat the bed?
It's hard for me to get over the last name Schwamer, but I will prevail.
It feels dangerous, doesn't it? Like, we're on the cusp of saying something inappropriate.
Yes, exactly. I fail to see how this is that different from being paid to review, like, a shampoo. Just because people feel really precious about books, and I don't know this creator, and I don't, like, know if his vibe was really off when he posted this, like, because it feels like maybe it was just off-putting the way he did it.
Yes.
But on principle, it doesn't feel that different from any other sponsored content to me. But also, I do understand, as a person who talks about books on the internet, I don't know, I wouldn't call it shame, but I do have some, like, guilt and, like, weird feelings of how many books get sent to me. Often the smaller ones from a new author, smaller publisher, whatever, that I don't share or talk about at all or even get to reading, to be honest. And so I do feel that. But I can see if I were in this position as Squamer, if I would feel like, hey, maybe this is a way to make a little cash. I don't know. I don't understand why this is an uproar, to be honest.
I kind of landed the same place. Like, this just feels like value proposition. Right. This is a creator leveraging platform economy and offering his reach and influence for a price. And did the way he do was it kind of weird and off putting, like you said, Laura? 100%. And I think that feels like a lot of the issue. But at the same time, it didn't seem that different from when I talk about Zins. And for money that I've never done, but in the ad read, I pretend like it's just how I unwind after a day or maybe get started. I don't really remember what I read. But like, that's just the deal. I wasn't like, see, I'm not on Book Talk, so I don't know the sensibility, but I wasn't offended by the premise and the value proposition he put forward.
Same. Well, I think it's because book people are crazy. Book people are so precious about books, but other industries have fully moved into paid ad reads.
Okay, let me play devil's advocate, because you said, how is this different from talking about a shampoo? I think some people would argue, and I don't know that it's me, but I would say the argument would be, well, Olaplex, it wasn't someone's dream since they were 6 years old to write a book. And although, shout out to those chemists doing great work, but it's like L'Oreal and Estee Lauder are just big faceless corporations. What's the big deal about getting paid to talk about a shampoo? But if I talk about Knox's, All Things Reconsidered, and I say, hey, I'll read it for $200. Now, he did threaten every author of, like, if I don't like the book and you pay me $800, I will talk about that I didn't like the book because I'm an honest person, you know? And so the author was going to take a risk. But could the argument be made of, like, people are more precious about it because it is a more precious thing?
I would suggest that if this man was getting paid, that he probably wouldn't pan it because he wants more people to pay him to keep doing this. And so I just don't really think that that really matters, that it was someone's dream. I mean, I think that that is sort of tangentially related to what I said about, like, book people are so precious about it, whether they're the author side or on the reader side. But, like, the actual facts of it, he is not going to let you pay him $800 and then totally rip it apart if he wants to continue doing it.
Yeah. And I think, Jim, you delineated that really well of, like, there's a person attached to the book, right? There's a preciousness. Yeah. There's a humanity to it, whereas there's not to Herbal Essences and the old orgasm commercials they used to do, right? That is, like, that's set apart. But I do think this is where, because a recurring thing we talk about is, like, the author not knowing how to function in this world and either being, like, too invested or too entitled to their interpretation of the story. Like, when you sell it to a production company, you don't get to make all the calls because you took the check. And I think similarly, when you wrote a book, it's extremely personal, absolutely. But it's also a commodity. And if you're not ready to market it and pretend and participate in the commodification of your art, then this is, like, no country for old men. Like, you shouldn't be here. So I appreciate the I'm going to get a $200 deposit because it's my time. And then before I take it to the next level, I'm going to charge you $800. And maybe it's good marketing for me to just, like, crap on this book for you. I don't know. That's your call. But I do think it's that inability for readers and writers to disentangle, like, their love for reading and books and their investment of the art, which with, like, the value and the reality of the marketplace.
Well, and I do think there is the secondary underlying issue, because I do think some of the criticism that I saw in the comments of other posts, you know, people love to stitch. They're like, white man down, let's go. Like, they get very excited about that because they're going to get a lot of views. But a lot of times I saw that the criticism from some content creators who do regular book content was, you should read books because you're drawn to them, because you love them, because they're in a genre that you have a great affection for. And I thought, y'all all act like y'all didn't read Yesteryear. You all act like you didn't read Whistler. You're also reading books that are super popular because you want to be a part of the dialogue. And so I always think there's this post-scandal, like, purity that everybody thinks they have. But if I were to scroll back in their feed, I would be like, Yeah, you read Famesick like all of us read Famesick and loved it. But like, don't pretend that you're only reading the biographies and memoir. I'm really looking for that backlist special thing. Like most of you are not doing that because that does not get you clicks. It does not resonate.
Do you think that this is less about the book part of it and more about how audiences don't always want influencers to make money?
Yes. I think it's like a reaction to this felt too gauche. This felt too like crude. And it's funny, like living in the political moment we're in, where it's like, you know, for the last 20 years or whatever, we assume there was some corruption going on, but people were chill about it. And now it's like, well, what if we just do it in your face? What are you gonna do about it then? And if it's like, it feels strange. So I think for, especially for book readers, I think other, pop cultural fans are more amenable to that crass monetization. But I think book readers in particular are like, this isn't fair. You shouldn't be monetizing this in this way, or I don't like it, or it makes me uncomfortable, when it is a reality of it's that weird convergence of the creator economy and this thing that I like so much.
And I will say for us and for Laura, like for all three of us, we are creating free content and that we are hoping lead you to our paid exclusive content. Mm-hmm. Do all of us put our books that we're reading and that we've reviewed behind a paywall? Hell yeah, we do. Like, because we know that that is an incentive. And we all got bills to pay, you guys. We got to pay for them books. I got that Book of the Month Club. That's $15. I got to find that, you know? So y'all are helping me do that. But I also think that it's unfair in many ways to need curation, right? Because the reason we need help finding a shampoo is because there's too many dang shampoos. I need to know what's the best shampoo. I need to know what's the best pen. What's the best notebook? All the things. What's the best planner? I want someone to do that work to tell me which luggage is the best carry-on. But when people start making money for it, we're like, but did you mean it? Or did you not mean it? Mm-hmm. And so you're constantly hearing influencers are like, no, I love this author. I always read their books. I'm a huge fan. This is still a great book in this series. I also have to pay my bills. I had to pay for this ring light, you guys. Mm-hmm. But I get, because people need curation help in their book picking. It's just that they get, but like, you don't get mad at the bookstore, at the indie bookstore staffer who's put their little card under there. Guess what? They got paid to do that. They got paid not to pick that specific book, but like everybody's getting paid somehow. And you just got to be, maybe PB needs to be smarter. Maybe OnlyFans is, you need to go back like that.
This goes back to the book talk community being crazy, because one thing about people wanting to be an influencer or not, like a lot of people are not trying to be a beauty influencer. They can see that like that is not their lane. And so they don't really care if you get paid for the shampoo sponsor, but a lot of people in the book community think that they could review books publicly with a large audience. And maybe in fact, they, you know, think that they are doing that service to people in their Goodreads review that's 1,000 words long. And so how dare someone else who is doing the thing that they could do if they just put a little effort into it, make money on it? That's the like sort of Jackson Pollock of it all. Like, oh, I could do a splatter painting and make $1 million. Well, no, you couldn't, because you couldn't. That's sort of, I think, also the rub with lots of different influencers of like, if you think you could do it, then how dare they actually capitalize on it?
Yeah. Well, and JB, I'm curious, how much of this is he is a guy in a traditionally not super male place, and he is allegedly hot. I'm not trying to be judgmental. I did when you teed this up for me.
Butterface.
Okay, that was my question. Like, I wanted to ask, like, is this guy hot? Like, just plain simple. Like, Laura, is this guy hot?
Butterface anymore?
We can say Butterface. Yeah, we can.
Don't welcome, take Butterface Laura. From us. You know,
don't come on. Steal the
it's
one
Trump's
thing
second
we
term,
love.
Laura. We can say Butterface.
Plus,
okay,
plus it's a white man with 586,000 followers on TikTok. He'll be fine.
If anybody can get the Butterface bomb, it's this dude. Okay.
But you're exactly right. I think, listen, can I be honest? I think it, like what you both just said, is 99.9% of the issue. It's a smaller content creator going, well, I'm earnest and good. And why does he have 586,000 followers and I have 9,000 followers? What's happening? Why is this isn't fair? I'm a good person. And then it's Listen, all I'm telling you, men will come into book spaces. And now it's a whole gag of like, don't get tempted by this white guy. Don't get tempted by this white guy. There's a lawyer who got famous on TikTok, Andrew Iske, who he got famous because he was having a rock argument with his neighbor. Like, whose rocks are these and who's responsible for dealing with them? And then he read Fourth Wing and people were like, oh my God, he's so hot. He's not hot. He had to go to get a, he had to go to Turkey to get a hair transplant. Y'all need to calm down. He's not that hot. But like, because he read.
Let the man get a turkey hair transplant, Jamie. God.
Because the bar is so low. It's like, oh, look, he read a book.
He went from having a literal rock argument in his front yard to now he's a sex symbol. I don't know.
He's a sex symbol. So yeah, I do think some of it is there's a little bit of tinge. And listen, we've all experienced it, right? We've all made podcasts for many years where we're like, oh, good. Smartless is here. We're so glad that they just decided to Amazon daily delivery a mic so that they could now make $40 million a year. That's fine. That's fine. Yeah. So I get it. Like the vibe is there. But listen, you might ask, was he affected? No, he was not. He lost 15,000 Instagram followers out of 350 at the time.
Wow.
And he lost 6,000 followers on TikTok, which is not even 0.1%. So he's
fine. I did watch his follow up where he was like, sorry about that.
Yeah.
I think I didn't think enough of the thing. And then I watched a lot of his videos and I wanted to put Laura on the spot. You're obviously living in a universe where you're happily married. No issue there. Let's go alternate universe, Laura. Mm-hmm. You're meeting up with a guy. He takes his shirt off, full chest dragon tattoo, like full chest. We're talking like Caraxes, House of the Dragon, full blown. Are you like, yes, let's do this? Or I have some questions.
Both.
I get why this guy's popular. Actually, then, I guess, you know? Jamie, did you say he has a lot of male fans, like a lot of male followers?
No. No, I don't think so. No.
I must have misheard that. I was like, wow.
No. He has a lot of, because it's me. It's like, oh, look, a man that's not the worst in my feed. Yay. Let's see what he's up to.
The bar really is low, isn't it?
The bar is. Listen, there's the guy from Australia who also read a book. He worked in a backhoe. I don't know. It was like one of those things.
In a backhoe. Okay.
Well, yeah. Like that's where he would always film his videos, like in a hard hat on a construction site. And he'd be like, hey, you guys, I'm reading Throne of Glass. And this B word got a book deal. He got a book deal. And we were like, everybody was like, can he write? Why is he getting a book deal?
I mean, I'm not going to lie, though, just on description alone, I am going more for the backhoe guy than the dragon tattoo.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And with an Australian accent? With an Australian accent, too?
Yeah. Mm.
Yeah. It'll get you. It works. It'll get you every time.
It works. Yeah. Okay. So officially, we are good with PB. What does PB stand for in PB Squared?
I think it's a mystery because of his, like, because everywhere I looked, I kept trying to find his real name. So if you know his real name, let us know. Because it's probably like Chad. You know,
I went Playboy and then peanut butter. And then I was like, you should probably stop there.
No, so, I wouldn't guess any other things. No. So if anybody knows his real name, let us know in the comments on Instagram. We would love to call him by his government name. But maybe it is PB Squamer.
Also in the comments, is he hot? Just answer
the question. Yeah, let us know if he's hot. And you do need to go look at his most popular TikTok, which is his mast and his body.
Yeah.
Maybe you're like Laura and you're back in because you're like, I am into that dragon tattoo.
Yeah, full dragon tattoo. All right.
He's masked.
He's masked. That's exactly right. Yeah.
Okay, Laura, do you want to introduce your topic and why it was interesting to you?
Okay, listen, this has been a headline in like the most literary of places, right? This has been a developing story, but celebrated writer Rachel Cusk has a new book coming out August 25th. She's written 13 novels. She's written 6 nonfiction books. She's won a gajillion prizes. She's sort of credited with like introducing a new experimental way to write fiction. But Rachel Cusk's new book is a fiction book. It's a novel that is allegedly a humiliating takedown of her real life friend, Natalie Portman.
Pre-ordered, by the way. I've already pre-ordered this book. Like, I really want to read it.
Well, the more I read about it, like the actual content of the book, I don't know that I want to read it or not. But here is the premise of this fiction book and why everyone thinks it's actually about Natalie Portman. So the premise is a writer meets up with a very famous celebrity in order to write her biography. And the celebrity in question in this book, that's called The Life of M, actually, she is an American who lives in a European city that's presumed to be Paris. She is the face of a major brand. She is an actress who became famous by being put in overly sexualized roles when she was too young for them. Then here's the kicker, because that's specific to Natalie Portman, but it's not everything about Natalie Portman.
That's like her role in Leon, right?
Right. Role in Leon. She's the face of Dior. Natalie Portman is. But in The Life of M, this actress character became really famous playing a ballerina in a dark film, which is like very obviously a nod to Black Swan. Now, what is interesting about this being allegedly about Natalie Portman, because this does happen. People do write books about famous figures that are very thinly veiled, you know, like Miranda Priestly in The Devil Wears Prada is very obviously Anna Wintour. You know, more recently, Yesteryear is very clearly about the ballerina farm girl. So this is a thing that happens. But the twist to this one is that Rachel Cusk knows Natalie Portman. Natalie Portman has declared herself a big fan in the past. In both 2021 and 2024, Natalie Portman picked a Rachel Cusk book for her online book club and then fanned out with her. She has given multiple interviews over the years where she talks about how brilliant Rachel Cusk is. So I don't know if they're like friends, like text you on your birthday kind of friends, but they're definitely more than acquaintances. And so for Rachel Cusk to write this book where the fictional portrayal of this actress in The Life of M comes off as shallow, as very performative, as not really knowing who she really is, I think that the book is looking at like identity and fame and who we are when we are or are not being observed. Like, I think those are interesting themes. I do think it's bold to take on a person that you actually know in real life, even if she is super, super famous. And I feel like the question that I wanted to pose here, like why this has been interesting to me, even though I don't have a dog in that fight about Natalie Portman herself, like I don't consider myself a fan or not a fan, I'm pretty neutral on Natalie Portman. But like, is being such a famous figure, like some of those ones I already named, you also have like a Gwyneth Paltrow, a Martha Stewart, like if being an iconic famous figure, does that just sort of give everyone fair game to be able to write about you in an unflattering fictional way? Like it just feels like these are real people, like celebrities are real people. But they're also, you know, icons of like a certain standard. They're like, they're also stand-ins for parts of our culture, right? That we're trying to make a commentary on. So I am curious what y'all think about like, if a person is this amount of famous, are they fair game to just be written about in this way that is humiliating, possibly fame changing, like possibly changing the way that the world views them or like their legacy, their history, I guess. What do you think?
Because I was curious how much this has impacted press around Natalie Portman, because I was like, is this just us? Is this just us seeing this in our corner of the world? But when I Google Natalie Portman and I click news, every article is about this, and it's Vanity Fair, Yahoo, The Cut, The Independent, Page Six. CNN. Like, everyone is talking about this. Obviously, this is the week the book comes out. And so everybody is having chatter about this. And I love it. You can read, we'll link in the show notes. There's a New Yorker. She wrote the first chapter, like she released last year, a year ago, August, the first part of this book. And it's actually still the same. Like, she didn't make any change. And it starts with, a little while ago, I told the actor M that I was thinking of writing her autobiography. She liked the idea. She's a good sport. Would you just make it up? She said. And that's the opening of the book. And I was like, oh, I'm in. I think legally, we'll get to legal corner probably by the end of this, because I did some research with an attorney to ask, like, what are the ramifications of this? But I love it. Are you kidding me? This is right up my alley. A celebrity who thinks she's better than us. You all know Natalie Portman thinks she's better than us. And she won that Oscar and was like, yeah, I'm going to break up marriages so that I can end up with this guy who taught me to pirouette. What did he do? Cheated on her. That's how the life works. You can't be the mistress and then expect not for him to have another mistress. And so for me, and I don't know if it's just Natalie Portman always rolling around in those Dior commercials in those big dresses, and I'm just having to look at her perfect face. I don't know if it's just personal that I have beef. Do I have beef with Natalie Portman? I think I do. Also, that horrific performance in Star Wars. That's the only article that came up, by the way, that wasn't about this book, was Hayden Christensen really wants Natalie Portman to come back for Star Wars because he has an idea. I'm like, Hayden, you don't have a great track record with this. So
Everybody's got ideas, bud. That doesn't mean we make franchise extensions.
So I have no problem with this.
Yeah. I'm like, I think... I've always believed, and this has been true to our inception when we were doing like bachelorette recaps and we were like scrutinizing the contestants. I think if you are a public figure, leveraging your fame or celebrity for money or the opportunity for money, I think you are agreeing to be in conversation with that leveraging of fame and celebrity. You don't have exclusivity over it. There feels like an invisible line of like, this is in poor taste and this is acceptable. Like paparazzi, way over the line. But there's a book like this, I think is kind of interesting. I would make the case, the idea of like, let's socialize celebrity IP leaps to mind right now of like, I feel like if celebrities are going to engage in elaborate constructions of what they think we want them to believe about them via PR relationships, show answers, stuff like that, there's a degree of like kayfabe with that of like, this is all kind of a fiction we're participating in to manipulate you. I think it's only turnabout's fair play of like, we should be able to, I mean, you could look at modern celebrities as like a little bit of mythology, a little bit of folklore. They're these large ideas that we all kind of can grasp onto and grapple with. And I haven't read the book obviously, but in a way that kind of alleges Natalie Portman, I think it's pretty clever. The skeptical version of me wanted to ask, is there a chance that this is just really canny marketing? Of like putting that smoke out there that this is about Natalie Portman, this is about Natalie Portman. And at the end of the day, it's actually not really about Natalie Portman.
Well, there is some of that in that the content of the book, it doesn't really matter that it's loosely based on someone that has the same, you know, resume as Natalie Portman, because the book itself is sort of dealing with something else entirely. So they just sort of use this caricature of someone that we would instantly recognize, which we've all seen done in books. I just thought of another one. Curtis Sittenfeld, you know, does this over and over again, actually. And I love it when she does it, you know. Yeah. But I think that
Friends with those people. She's not friends with Hillary Clinton.
So the real life part is something to think about. And then the other thing for me to think about is there are certain celebrities that it's easy to make a caricature of them. Like they are even capitalizing on it. Like Gwyneth Paltrow, for example, is like a perfect example. To me, Natalie Portman is more of a private celebrity. And so that felt like, I don't know where you would actually draw this line, but it just, to me, it felt a little bit more like, that doesn't seem as fair. And I do think, you already brought up paparazzi knocks, but I do think that there is part of the question of like, it's cruel to say, you sign up for this, I think, in all across, like, just all aspects. You know, you didn't sign up to be stalked. You maybe didn't sign up to be written about in this way. It's not necessarily illegal, but who gets to say that it's fine or not? Because in someone like with Natalie Portman, who is a little bit more private, when we know some of the basics of her life, but she is a little bit more private, it can be legacy changing. That's what I'm saying. Like, it can, you are, might think about her differently because of this fiction or portrayal, whereas like someone else, Ballerina Farm, for example, you could go consume actual content from her and make up your own mind. And Natalie Portman doesn't have exactly that same leverage.
No. So, okay. So I was curious about the legal ramifications of this. Like you said, like, this can be fame changing, and that actually is a legal, like, that is a legal basis that a celebrity can sue, is if it affects the way they prefer to interact with the public. It's under a right to publicity. Like, they can decide how do they want to interact with the world. Now, in the Cut piece, they talked about that it's actually kind of, there's not really, there's only a little bit of gossip that's rumored. Most of it is just, she was in a ballerina movie. She had a breakup with her. Like, she married a guy on set. Like, she, it, like, ended relationships, got with this guy. That's all factual, like, public information, right? Like, it's all divorce records and all the things. But it was interesting because it was like defamation. You can only sue for defamation if you make a false statement about the person and you identify them, which Rachel Cusk and I'm sure the publisher's attorneys have done their due diligence to make sure, hopefully. They don't always do their due diligence, as we've learned from Mattel. But they've done their due diligence to figure out if this is okay. And then the other one I thought that was interesting is the right of publicity. It's really about they get to decide how they want to interact. If you don't name them, you actually kind of get precluded from that. And if you live in California, California doesn't give any celebrities the right to publicity. They can't file, because every state's laws are different. But California's like, you can put anybody in your book. You want Zac Efron to take you to prom? Sure, he can take you to prom. Like, it doesn't matter. So I'll be curious, because I was looking at Natalie's upcoming movies. So she has a movie coming out in December, because I was thinking she'll have to do press. Will this still be in the zeitgeist for a reporter to want to ask? I'm sure a publicist will say, don't ask. The comedy to me is, she's also in Lena Dunham. She's the star of Lena Dunham's film that is coming out at the beginning of next year, which I think is so interesting because of Fame Sick and what do people have the right to? For me, I fall in the camp of, it's not that I think you have signed up for this, but to suggest that becoming a celebrity, even for her, it was tough because she didn't become a celebrity. Her mother made her a celebrity, right? Mm. Like, her mother told her, you'll become, because a 14-year-old can't decide, I'm willing to take on the cost of celebrity life. They couldn't possibly. And she's disappeared for seasons and she does try to live a very private life. So am I going to read this? Yes. Did she get betrayed by someone that she thought was a friend? Probably. Yeah.
Well, I'm curious. I'm going to reserve judgment, obviously. I know we all are until we read it. But I'm curious to what extent this is like, because I think, especially in books right now and writing and criticism, I think there's been this argument of like, you can only write what you know, or you can write what you've only experienced. You're not allowed to project forward or write from a different perspective or ethnicity and stuff like that. And we've had some good conversations around that. I'm curious how much of this is like being in someone like Natalie Portman's orbit, if we are to assume they are some kind of friends, that's probably a very interesting artistic lens to attack a story. So how much of this is going to be like a betrayal of Natalie Portman versus just like a contemplation on what is it like to be someone like Natalie Portman? Because there were a couple quotes, I don't know if it was, I think it was Vanity Fair I read this in when I was reading about this, and in description of this Natalie Portman-esque character, she writes, she's not sure she would recognize or want anonymity because she's never been anonymous. She was woken into consciousness of herself so early that she has no memory of being unnoticeable. Severed from her own nature, she enacts her character as though it were a part she were playing whose lines, as soon as she had mastered them, invoke ever greater terrains of emptiness and silence. See, I think it's interesting, especially right now in our culture and in our time, what does it mean to be a celebrity? What does it mean for them to be a celebrity and to reckon with that? I think there's space for this to be a really interesting book and consideration of a person like Natalie Portman without it necessarily having to be like, here's some fun secrets about Natalie Portman you don't know about, you know?
Well, and if you take the celebrity part out of it, if you take the Natalie Portman piece out of it and just ask if you should be able, if a writer, an artist, should be able to make art about people they actually know, then that brings up the question that, you know, was viral a few years ago with that article, The Bad Art Friend.
Right.
Yes.
About someone who took something from Facebook groups, real life struggle of someone getting a kidney donation, posting in a Facebook group about it. And then they wrote a fictional piece about that. But they used literal words from these Facebook posts of a real person. So all the celebrity questions of if they, you know, not deserve it, but if they're that sort of part of the gig, all of that, it goes in a different direction when you start to think about, well, if they are real life friends or at least acquaintances, like, does that change the way you think about it? For me, it does a little bit, because now you've taken someone's real life, and especially when it's done in an unflattering way, and how sticky that can be, and how Rachel Cusk just seems to not care even a little bit. And as someone who writes nonfiction, it's all right. As someone who writes nonfiction, and Knox, you write nonfiction too. Like, it is tricky territory to write about, even if you're writing about yourself, there's other people in your life that show up in your stories, and how like trepidatious that can be. Apparently not for Rachel.
Well, and I love this with the underlying of the last thing that we really paid attention to that Natalie Portman made was May December, where she is following Julianne Moore, who is supposed to be Mary Kay Letourneau without being Mary Kay Letourneau. And Natalie Portman is trying to learn how to be her. It, like, I just love that. And I'm like, I hope there's a reference to that in the book. Like, I hope Rachel like found a red thread to that point about like this actor is also trying to be in roles where she's pretending to be other people. And I'm like, ah, that'd be great. The one quote I saw that was, I thought, embarrassing is that she's like, the actor doesn't go to therapy. She gets her best advice from her accountant. I was like, well, that is embarrassing. Like, to be honest, that's embarrassing. Like,
but I do think that's an interesting kind of, I don't know, like dichotomy of the, what is appropriate transference of like, applying, like, I think of Ben Affleck, because I was trying to make a short list for y'all to consider of like, what's a book you'd want to read about that's like kind of about a celebrity, but like this, like a different version of this, but just a different celebrity maybe. And I kept thinking about Ben Affleck, and I thought about his ability to be in those like Us Weekly streets, also maintain his artistic cred, lament about being in Us Weekly, but he is in Us Weekly. So I have to understand there's a bit of there's some kind of opting in, like when you date someone like J-Lo, I guess. But also artistically, when you look at a role like Gone Girl, that character is a lot of Ben Affleck. Like, there's a reason I think Dave Fincher cast him, because there are so many aspects of that role that he embodies. So at what point is it like it's fair for him to leverage that professionally, but it's unfair for someone else to leverage that in their profession in some kind of expectation?
Third Love makes bras that actually fit, so they know this. If your bra feels uncomfortable, the problem isn't your body, it's your bra. Third Love designs for comfort first. Soft fabrics, support that doesn't dig, pinch, or slip. Bras that feel good and look good under everything you wear. Shop Third Love and explore over 60 sizes, including AA through H, and half cup sizes you won't find anywhere else. Get $15 off your first purchase at thirdlove.com with code PODCAST15.
Here's what happened when one journalist reported on DEI programs.
I decided to just focus on the University of Michigan. I obtained internal documents that showed that the school had spent about $250 million on DEI programs. I spent 2 weeks in Ann Arbor talking to everybody I could find. The unintended consequences of these programs, they had sort of left everybody dissatisfied. And this expensive machinery the school had built just imploded. If you're a journalist, you are not on anyone's team. All you're trying to do is figure out as many of the facts as you can gather. The facts are going to guide you to where the story lands. You're not taking sides. I'm Nick Confessori. I'm an investigations reporter for the New York Times.
journalists like Nick follow the facts wherever they lead. They go where news breaks, get answers firsthand, and publish what they find. That's fact-based reporting. Seek it out if you don't already.
Okay, well, I'm curious if you're listening, let us know. Are you going to read this book? And I am curious which celebrity, because when you said Ben Affleck, I was like, that exactly. Are he and Matt really friends? Or is that a PR friendship that's just persevered? And how does he feel about that? Like, how would the author describe Jen Garner in all of this?
Okay, well, listen to what y'all are saying. If you were to read a fictionalized version of Ben Affleck and if he and Matt are really friends and what really went down with J-Lo and Jen Garner, you're now taking that. Yeah. Like, are we now taking it to legacy changing? That might not be the truth or not. Well, they're fictionalizing it.
That's fan fiction, right? If we're like Matt Damon and Ben Affleck had a big fight over a woman. But if it's like Sven Snaffleck and Jack Damon, then it's like, well, that's interpretation, right? That's artistic.
Plus, he's Swedish. You have to expect that he's going to be rotten at times.
It's a different culture there, guys. Yeah, I don't know. Exactly.
Yeah. But it gets twisted until people are like, was that the fictionalized version or was that the real thing? And people don't know.
You're having a conversation about truth and what is truth and what is our ability to critically think in regards to truth. And
that's not the conversation I'm having. I'm like,
it's not great, right? It's not great.
I want to read it.
But here's my list. You tell me which book you'd read. It was Ben Affleck, Gary from Teen Mom, obviously, Tilda Swinton, Johnny Depp, or Nicole Kidman. What book would you want to read? Oh. I was leaning Nicole Kidman.
Yeah.
I would read Tilda Swinton because I need to know about this throuple or whatever is happening in her love life. I gotta get a view into that.
Tilda probably has the weirdest personal life because we don't know hardly anything about it.
Exactly.
And when it pops up, when anything pops up, it's like, she owns a mine in Ghana? What's going on?
You could project anything onto that.
Exactly.
There's a Bill Murrayfication where it's like, no one will believe you. And I wouldn't believe if like Tilda Swinton came up to me, you know?
Okay, so Laura's not going to read this book. Are you going to read it a little? You're going to read it a little.
I might read it a little.
You got to know. You got to see.
You got to know. I'm just curious. I would love for Natalie Portman to just say, yeah. Like, that would almost be the perfect thing of her in an Instagram Live with Rachel at her house. They're drinking wine, and she's like, yeah, I love this. This is amazing. This book is great. Get this. What if she picked it for a book club? That'd be awesome. That's the way to solve it, is pick it for your book club.
Like, well, I do wonder how much she actually hates it. I mean, the headlines have said that she's furious, in quotes, and whatever. But I wonder if that's actually true. It's a little bit of like, you know, even bad press is good press kind of thing. It rises her star. Because when I was researching to talk about this today, I was like, I didn't know people felt this way about Natalie Portman. Like, I don't. Like, I didn't realize she was the icon status. I guess it's Star Wars mostly. Like, I really liked Black Swan, but I did not feel any kind of strong way about Natalie Portman. But people do, apparently. Like, she is a target for this type of work, but I didn't feel that way about her. So I wonder now if this will now make everybody feel that way about her.
Well, because the
you haven't seen Natalie Raps on SNL, obviously, in a long time.
I have. I have. But you know.
You're like, it didn't imprint on me. Thank you.
Yeah.
Listen, I will say, when the last really big press run you had was that your ballet teacher husband cheated on you, you want the narrative to change. Like,
maybe
I think so. To me,
she had a Jackie O run, right? She had a little Jackie O sauce. She got to,
yeah, but this happened at the cheating happened after.
So, oh, did it really?
Like, yeah, because May December was 2023, and the cheating happened, I think, right at the beginning of 2024, and that their marriage ended. And so that's been the last run, and now you've got, I think she has 4 movies coming out in the next 18 months. You, instead of being asked about your weird husband, it'd be great if you're like asked about this weird book that might be about. I'd much rather talk about a weird book that might be about me. Right.
True.
See, I wanted to bring up how this reminds me a little bit of Sentimental Value, that dog shit movie. I didn't.
No,
finish.
It is a great movie. You have horrible taste.
It's so boring. It's so slow. But it's like this guy, the dad, Stellan Skarsgård, is telling a story, and it involves his daughter, who happens to be an actress. And he offers her the role. She doesn't take it. So then he casts, which it's not, it's Elle Fanning.
Elle Fanning, yeah.
Yeah. So so she has to watch Elle Fanning play her. So it's like, what kind of commentary or what kind of role is it when you get to watch a famous actress be you or interpret like your version of events that you were complicit in, but didn't get to articulate yourself? I think it's interesting.
Fast forward to the Book of M gets made into a movie and Jenna Ortega plays.
And Natalie Portman's her mom. That was fun.
You know so I mean? Good. Please That'd make be it way be to do so. It.
And
Please,
Tilda Swinton universe. Is her throuple mate. I think it's a great movie. I can't
I
wait
think it's
to
a great
watch.
Movie.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of Shelf Respect. A huge thanks to Laura Tremaine for joining us today. To get more Laura Tremaine, you can find her over on Substack, where she hosts both the Secret Stuff Book Club, currently finishing their sixth annual Stephen King Summer, and co-hosts the Slow Read Substack, where they're about to start a section-by-section breakdown of Outlander by Diana Gabaldon. Is it Gabaldon? That's how
Gabaldon.
Okay, Gabaldon. Yeah. It just, that feels a little verb-ish.
Not so, you're an Outlander. You're a huge Outlander fan.
The TV show. Not the book. Not the book, but Godspeed on the book. She is also on Instagram at laura.tremaine.
We'll include links in the show notes to all the places you can find Laura. She is a fun. Listen, her salon sessions on Instagram are one of my favorite things she does. And so following her there would be a win. Don't forget, everything we talked about is in the show notes. And we would love to see you talk about it too on Instagram at Read With Shelf Respect. Or if you're a hardback, you can talk about it on the Patreon post.
Ask your pointed questions, declare your intentions, or start a respectful fight in the comments with one of your enemies just to eventually become lovers.
I'm Jamie Golden. You can find me on the internet at Jamie B. Golden.
I'm Knox McCoy. You can find me on socials at Knox McCoy. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye, guys.
The end.